Chapter 12. Secure the future. The untested tested. Escape. Arcus awoke the instant that battle stations was called. A klaxon started its urgent song. They were under attack. He was heading for the armor stands in the corner of the room a second later. For a moment, there was calm in his quarters, no sign of anything amiss. And then an explosion blew somewhere and the fabric of the station shook. Arcus's voxbead chimed while he was fixing it into his ear. He attached his sub-vocalization pickup to his neck. "Arcus," he said. There was no reply. "This is Brother Sergeant Arcus speaking. Go ahead." The vox hissed. A terrible screaming came and went. An unrecognizable voice burst out of the voxbead unexpectedly and deafeningly. Arcus reduced the volume and went on calmly collecting his light armor and began buckling it on. His full battle plate occupied a clamp stand next to his scout gear, but there was not time to get into it. The vox screeched again before stabilizing. "Repeat, Sergeant Arcus, this is Captain Adalus." The tense hubbub of the command deck sounded behind the captain's words. "The 8th Legion are aboard. We have multiple hostile contacts heading towards the orbital." "I'll be there soon," Arcus said. "Countermand that. Remove the neophytes from the orbital. This is an invasion. We are heavily outnumbered. The scout cohorts are the future of our company. Keep them safe." Arcus's movements slowed a touch. Such an order suggested the imminent destruction of the company. "I understand. Courage and honor, Sergeant." The voxlink went dead. The screaming returned, louder than before. Arcus muted it and pulled his bolter, chainsword, and bolt pistol out of the arming locker. He regarded the specialized monitoring auspects he used to keep track of the scout's development, but left it behind. The time was past for such considerations. As a scoutmaster, Arcus's quarters were attached to the neophyte's barracks. He opened the shutter onto a room full of bunks. Less than a third were in use. Half of the company's scouts were engaged in training on the surface, and, owing to its sensitive assignment away from the Legion recruiting grounds, the auxilia of the 199th was currently under strength. Arcus was pleased to see the scouts were up and helping each other into their armor. They worked quietly and without fuss, diligently checking their weapons and talking little. Obadiah stood apart from the rest. Dark smudges under his eyes told a tale on his insomnia. He was already battle-ready and holding his weapon trained on the barracks door. The tallest, Ptolemachus, went to make his bed.
"Leave it, Ptolemachus," said Arcus.
"It's not an exercise."
Ptolemachus was the tallest of the scouts, the result of early problems with his omophagia. He had an instinctive feel for battlefield medicine, and had it in him to become an apothecary. Arcus knew them all intimately, their strengths and weaknesses, their capabilities, their doubts, their personal triumphs. Most would make fine legionaries, and being stationed on Sotha had granted them training opportunities most other neophytes did not enjoy. But they were unfinished. Their implants were mostly in place, but had not achieved full functionality. Their indoctrination was almost complete, but that was a minor check to the synthetic hormones raging through them all. Only when their biochemistry was regularized and their growth complete would they be able to fully master themselves and be fitted with their carapaces, a day still months away. It was too soon for them to fight. Until they were armored in the blue plate of Ultramar, they were, in a very real sense, his sons. The station was under attack by Legiones Astartes of the worst kind, and he feared for their survival.
"Obadiah said it wasn't a drill," said Tebakai.
Milk Pale, Obadiah's friend, a little unruly but otherwise with a high probability of legionary acceptance.
"You should listen to him," said Arcus.
"I said leave the bed, Ptolemachus. We must leave immediately. This is not an exercise. This is war. The station has been infiltrated by the Night Lords. Our orders are to evacuate."
The scouts looked up at this, commendably controlled in their reactions.
"We should stay. We should fight,"
Solon said this. A stolid, technically perfect candidate, he fit in well with the Legion's ideals, but lacked the imagination to progress far once his elevation was done.
"Solon's right, Sergeant," said Chryseos.
A good shot, but a little slow-witted. Arcas had his doubts whether the boy would pass his final trials.
We can't abandon our company,
Florian. Smallest of them all, but strong. His implants functioned perfectly. He was adjusting to his new body better than the rest.
You are not, said Arcas. You are the future of the Ejida. It is your role to ensure the gene seed of your predecessors lives on. Wherever you go, there the company goes.
Sergeant, began Malleus. He was keen of mind, that one, the best suited to reconnaissance, and he excelled at the scout's role because of it. But the same traits made him personally unreliable, too individualistic. Arcas cut him dead.
We have our orders. Your speed in preparation is superlative. Let us keep honoring our legion through exemplary service. We are leaving now.
Where? Asked Obadiah, speaking for the first time.
The Scout Auxilia gunship in Hangar 3, said Arcas.
Without waiting for orders, Obadiah opened the door to the wider barracks unit of the station and covered it as his six brothers filed out, bolters ready. Arcas watched, appraising everything. Their training would not be interrupted by this attack. Making these boys into warriors was his role in the company, and he would not cease until death. He assessed them as they sneaked from the barracks. They were focused, stealthy, weapons ready, even as they finished snapping their armor on. So far, so good. Alarms blared unceasingly from every corner of the orbital. Weapons fire banged in distant quadrants. Sergeant Arcas held his finger to his lips and looked quickly around a corner. Legionaries in the colors of the Night Lords pounded down the corridor, flashing red warning beacons lighting their armor in sinister colors. The scout squad readied themselves to fight, but no one came their way. After the last legionary had thundered past, Arcas spoke quietly.
They are headed for the command center, he said. They will be too focused on their primary target to pay much attention to the hangars or to worry about neophytes, if we are cautious.
Arcas directed his young charges forward, slapping each on the back as they ran on to count them out. Right then, he wished for his full battle plate. He watched his charges go, keeping low and moving silently as he had taught them. They paused at another junction. Florian reconnoitred and nodded back.
Go, 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 whispered Arcas.
They dashed across toward the stairwell. The youths tracked their weapons nervously down both directions of the corridor as Tebakai ducked through the door onto the small landing on the other side.
Tebakai, continue on point, ordered Arcas. Obadiah, Solon, bring up the rear.
Arcas pushed past the scouts. They all looked to him. They all needed him. They were performing well, but were unsure. He could taste their uncertainty on his neuroglottis.
A lack of confidence is your enemy as much as they are, he said quietly. Master it, or we will not survive tonight.
He leaned against the wall and nodded at Tebakai on the other side of the doorway. The boy gripped his bolter and nodded back. Bolt pistol in hand, Arcas went through the door. Tebakai leaned over the stair rail smoothly to cover his entrance. The stairwell was empty.
We are clear! Quickly now! Said Arcas.
With a stealth that made Arcas proud, the scouts jogged down the stairs. All the while, he was checking their covering patterns, their expressions, their reactions. The stairwell opened into a square room, as utilitarian and bare of adornment as the rest of the station. On that level, the sounds of battle were muted. The station's weapons batteries were falling silent, one by one. The Night Lords were monsters, but they were efficient. They were enacting a textbook seizure of an orbital facility, command center, and batteries first. They meant to take it intact. They approached one of Hangar 3's small doors. Arcas made sure the scouts were ready, checking them all for signs of stress. Seven resolved young space marines looked back at him. He nodded at them in approval, then input his clearance code to the keypad. The door clunked as the broad teeth locking it into the deck disengaged. It opened with a sigh of equalizing pressure. The hangar was dark and radiated a deep cold. Arcas held his hand up to stay his squad.
Obadiah, Solon, cover me.
Arcas's thoughts went to Malleus. His oculobe was lagging behind that of the others in its functionality. The boy would be nearly blind in the hangar. Arcas signaled for him to stay at the door and cover the entrance as the rest moved silently into the wide space of the bay. The temperature interface on the hangar threshold tightened his skin, and the fine hairs of his arms stood erect. Pallets of machinery and supplies covered in tarpaulins lined the outside edges of the bay. He headed for two pallets placed corner to corner and took refuge in the angle behind their cargoes. There were moorings for six ships in the hangar. Four were unoccupied. A lighter and the Scout Auxilius Thunderhawk sat at the far end, powered down, engines cold. The chamber was empty of occupants. He clicked his tongue softly and waved at the boys. They moved well through the door. Solon stumbled clumsily and lost his targeting line. He would need correcting for that later.
Obadiah, Tebakai, you are to come with me and act as my co-pilot and gunner. As of this moment, I'm appointing Obadiah as my second. Is that clear? If I should fall, he is in command.
Obadiah looked shocked. He was the youngest, and he'd had the experience under the mountain.
Obadiah did not see what Arcas saw, that his weathering of the incident indicated great strength.
Solon, Chryseis, you will remain on deck, weapons ready. Once we have the primary flight preparations complete, I want you to get Malleus and help him towards the ship.
Yes, Sergeant.
Pick a place, good cover. Cover door two.
Where?
Asked Chryseis. You know enough by now to decide for yourself. Ptolemachus, Florian, you remain by the access hatch and cover door one and the cargo gate.
Sergeant,
Ptolemachus acknowledged.
Are we ready?
They spoke their affirmations resolutely. Arcas looked them each in the eye. So much hope, so many futures that could be cut short if he made one error.
We march for Macrag, he said.
Arcas, Obadiah, Tebakai, Florian, and Ptolemachus sprinted for the Thunderhawk. The blast shield over the bay entrance was open, the void outside visible through the slight distortion of the atmospheric integrity field. The Night Lords approached in number. Arcas counted three heavy cruisers and a dozen smaller capital ships. They were poorly supported by lighter vessels, and he assumed these had suffered badly at the hands of the Lion. But there was no doubt Sotha was in trouble. If the ships were carrying their full capacity of legionaries, there could be more than 25,000 Night Lords in the system. Arcas beckoned to his charges. They gathered around the Thunderhawk's rearmost hatch. They waited for him to speak, their eyes gleaming with the reflected, blinking light of the integrity field's warning strip.
Hangar protocols remain active. Their full activation will draw the enemy to us. We must be through this door as soon as I open it. Do you understand? We will have little time to take flight.
They nodded.
On three. Three, two.
Arcas reached for the mechanism.
One.
The door opened, and the hangar came to life. Servitors, summoned by the ship's machine spirit, came out of their coffins. Warning lights came on. Recorded announcements blared over voxcasters. Arcas inwardly cursed his legion's affinity for safety regulations. He was sure if this were the hangar of a Space Wolves or Dark Angels vessel, they would be able to leave without announcing it so loudly. He hustled the scouts aboard.
Ptolemachus, Florian, to your stations. Obadiah, Tebakai, with me.
Obadiah and Tebakai followed Arcas onto the flight deck. Arcas slipped into the pilot's seat, already activating systems before his back settled against the rest. Obadiah sat next to him in the co-pilot's seat. Tebakai took the gunner's station behind. The fourth crew space was empty. The seats were sized for Space Marines in full battle plate. The youths would dwarf a standard man, but in the chairs they looked relatively small and frail by comparison.
Emergency flight preparation. Go. Skip the subphases. We need to get off station as quickly as possible.
The engine, never fully quiescent on a ship like a Thunderhawk, came smoothly online. The reactor thrummed. Systems blinked and chattered, their power coils filling the cockpit with an electric hum. The station shuddered again, twice, the aftershocks of another large explosion. Arcas suspected the Night Lords were breaching the command section doors. Gunfire sounded from outside the ship. Arcas punched a button, bringing up an external auger view. A grainy black and white image showed him Malleus shooting along the wall towards the hangar cargo gate. The broad doors had been opened wide enough to permit the entrance of a couple of Space Marines at once. A feeble ploy to catch the scouts by surprise. Bursts of light from bolt guns on rapid fire lit up dark armored figures coming through the door. The scouts performed well, catching the Night Lords in a three-way crossfire. One of the enemy fell, and they retreated. Arcus nodded in approval as Malleus smashed the door mechanism with his gun's stock. Malleus fell back to the other two, and they ran across the deck, firing at the gap in the cargo gate as they went. Then, the integrity field went out, deactivated by the invaders. The venting of the hangar's atmosphere was virtually instantaneous. Cargo tumbled end over end. The force of it was enough to shake the Thunderhawk. Solon and Malleus somehow stumbled through the hatch. Chryseis was ripped off his feet. He skidded across the deck plating, catching onto a grill atop a service hatch a second before he was sucked out of the station. The grill went whirling away into space, but Chryseis caught the shallow lip of the access hole, face contorted with the effort.
"Hold steady, Chryseis," urged Arcus over the cohort voxlink. "You will be forced out into the void. Fill your multi-lung. Keep your eyes closed. We shall retrieve you."
"Can we?" asked Tebukai.
Arcus did not respond. His hands danced over the Thunderhawk's controls. Engine noise throbbed in the cabin.
"Enemy approaching," said Tebukai.
Night Lords advanced into the venting hangar, their maglocks keeping them steady in the decompression gale blasting through the open cargo gate.
"Chryseis, let go," commanded Arcus.
The scout did not relinquish his grip.
"Maybe he can't hear," said Tebukai.
Bolt gun fire rattled off the Thunderhawk's tail section, blowing out chunks of its armor. But the plating was too thick to be troubled by small arms, and the damage was superficial. Engines whined louder as the fans of their ignition chambers built up speed.
"Neophyte Chryseis, let go! That is an order," said Arcus.
Chryseis lifted his head. By chance, he was looking directly into the picked feed lens. With gritted teeth, he let go. A bolt found him before he exited the hangar, blasting his chest wide open. He hit the vacuum dead, trailing ribbons of freezing blood. The scouts watched their comrade pinwheeling away in silence.
"Prepare to launch," said Arcus.
"I need more time,"
said Obadiah through gritted teeth.
"Stay calm," ordered Arcus. "Focus on your task."
Arcus flicked a dizzying array of switches. Obadiah helped as best he could. One session in the hypnomat was insufficient preparation to fly such a machine. Fragments of knowledge floated up to the surface of his mind and were dragged back down again before he could seize them and put them to use.
"Get the fuel ignition system ready," said Arcus.
"I'm not sure how," said Obadiah.
Even as he spoke, his hands went to a board of toggles and flicked them in a specific order that he was not aware he knew.
"Confirm fuel feed ready."
"Ready."
"That is not the correct response form, Neophyte."
"Fuel feed online, Sergeant," said Obadiah.
Tebukai hunched over the external view screens.
"They're bringing up las cannons."
"Not surprising," said Arcus.
"Hang on."
The hangar's vox system blurted out a series of urgent honks. The blast doors began to descend.
"I think not,"
said Arcus, slamming the Thunderhawk's main throttle wide open. Without lifting off, its engines roared and shunted it across the hangar deck as hard as if it had been swatted by the Emperor's own fury. Fans of sparks fountained off its landing gear as it hurtled towards the closing hangar doors. A hard jolt sent them off course. Arcus pulled on the sticks, recovering the ship. A blast of red light whipped past the cockpit, punching a guttering crater into the blast doors. Hazard striped teeth looked to close upon them, and Obadiah tensed in the co-pilot's seat. Then the ship was through and into the void on plumes of gas. Sound from outside ceased, and they were hurled into a deadly maelstrom that played out in eerie silence against the sky. The three cruisers were at high anchor a few hundred kilometers from the orbital, showers of drop pods falling from them as iron-hard tears that burst into flame when they encountered the upper atmosphere. Glaring shock fronts formed curved lenses of fire across their shielded undersides. Flights of Thunderhawks flew behind, noses up for atmospheric breaching. For a moment, the scout's craft went unnoticed.
"The ships aren't returning fire on the orbital," said Tebukai. "They're not firing on the Mechanicum arc either."
Arcus grunted, his face tight with concentration. Then give me a theoretical, lad. Tell me why.
They want them undamaged?
Arcus nodded. That is as good a guess as any. This attack will not go unnoticed. Warsmith D'Antioch will inform McCragg via the Pharos. As soon as Lord Gilliman hears of this, the Night Lords will have the best part of a legion to deal with. Their fleet will not stand against a full retribution force, so they will want to capture as many of our guns as they can and turn them on our brothers as they arrive.
We should have stayed to fight, Tebekai muttered.
You were given a direct order, Neophyte, and with good reason. You will do more good on the surface than up here. We will not be able to stop the Night Lords taking the orbital, but there are other considerations. The Night Lords exercise their unspeakable appetites on the civilian population. You scouts know the terrain better than anyone. If any of our people are to survive, then they will need your guidance. Our mission is to harass the enemy where we can. Withdraw, go to ground, attack again. Protect the colonists until such time as Lord Gilliman arrives to teach these bastards the error of their ways.
But without the Pharos to guide them, the journey could take months, said Tebekai.
If he gets here at all, said Obadiah. The Primarch will get here. You have had the privilege of meeting our father. Do you fear that crossing the storm is beyond him? Put those thoughts away. He will prevail. Whether or not you are alive to see vengeance is down to you. Do you understand?
Yes, Sergeant, said Tebekai.
Obadiah gave a tight nod. If you pass this test, you will have proven yourselves. You will be Legionis Astartes entirely, forged in the crucibles of war. Not many recruits can claim that. Try to stay alive.
We will, said Obadiah. Yes, Sergeant, said Tebekai.
Now prepare yourselves. We have been spotted. Three superiority fighters, Xiphon class. Our first test begins now.